You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Wisconsin voters approved nearly $770 million in education funding through local referenda. We'll learn more about what school districts are seeking and what voters didn't approve. First, there's a new push in Congress to make the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico a state. The bill, which has bipartisan backing, would grant Puerto Rico statehood within 90 days of passage. Democratic Congressman Darren Soto of Florida, the bill's author, said unlike previous efforts that called for additional referendums or other conditions, this plan is a straight admissions bill.
First, it's about democracy. We've had two elections where a majority of Americans there agreed to be a state. Second, it's about equality. We're also pushing for D.C. statehood, and the folks in Puerto Rico should be treated equally. And third, the current colonial status just isn't working. We saw the tragic recovery in Hurricane Maria and the PROMESA bill dealing with the debts, and they would really be served better to have two U.S. senators and four representatives in Washington helping work on a lot of these issues.
The legislation comes as President Trump reiterates his opposition to more disaster relief funding for Puerto Rico. Carlos Suarez Cardasquillo is a lecturer in political science and an affiliate faculty member of the Center for Latin American Studies at the University of Florida. He teaches courses on Caribbean politics and has researched his native Puerto Rico. Carlos, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Ralph. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to your audience and you today.
We'll talk about the current status of Puerto Rico as a U.S. territory. It's a different sort of thing than being a state. What does it mean to be a territory?
Yes, in this particular context, in the context of the early 20th century, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled what was known now under the jurisprudence that emerged out of the insular cases that Puerto Rico would be foreign in a domestic sense. So what that means is that the way the U.S. engaged Puerto Rico would be one that at best is quite undefined or dubious or flexible or whichever word comes to mind, because that paradoxical phrase has, in my opinion, given way to a lot of the confusion and lack of clarity in terms of finding a solution to the territorial status of Puerto Rico.
Now, a citizen of Puerto Rico is an American citizen, right? But without the ability to vote for members of Congress, the Senate, or the United States president.
Precisely. The citizenship was extended in the context of 1917. And as a result of that, Puerto Ricans have been able to gain full rights once they make their way to the 50 states. But while they're in Puerto Rico or any other of the U.S. territories, they don't have a representation in Congress that has a voice and a vote. Currently, what we have is what's called a resident commissioner, and she does have a voice but does not have a vote.
Now, historically, I know the people of Puerto Rico in the 20th century, there were arguments about whether they would want to be a state, whether they wanted to be completely independent of the United States or stay in their territorial status. More recently, what does public opinion look like among Puerto Ricans? Do they want statehood?
Some would argue that there's a growing trend. Puerto Rico has had historically five plebiscites. And the past 2 months, at first glance, will show that the statehood movement won, yet both cases were highly contested in terms of the plebiscite by those that favor the current Commonwealth status. So it can be argued that, yes, in the past two plebiscites, it's tipping more towards statehood. But what should be noted is that it has been highly contested and questionable by other members of the political traditions in Puerto Rico. So it's a contested issue. And what should be noted is that all of these plebiscites have lacked support of Congress in the form of making them a binding political practice. Basically, they have been electoral exercises in Puerto Rico that have helped to mobilize and spur the debate and sometimes make its way to the U.S., but it hasn't gone past that.
Carlos Suarez Carrasquillo is with us from the University of Florida. We're looking at a bill in Congress aimed at making Puerto Rico a state, a member of the union with full state benefits. They would instantly be the 30th, if I read it right, 30th biggest state in the United States. Carlos, this bill in Congress now, is this different than efforts we've seen in the past to make Puerto Rico a state?
I think the expediency of the 90-day term has been met with as a sign of relief by those who particularly favor statehood. And for those who do not, it has been received with the opposite. Some have made a mockery out of it or question how serious of an effort it is. So it certainly has galvanized the pro-statehood camp on the island and also members of the Puerto Rican diaspora that have been willing to co-sign these efforts, such as the case of Darren Soto.
Now, this all happens in the midst of this ongoing story about the tragic Hurricane Maria in 2017, long wrangling over U.S. aid to Puerto Rico as part of disaster relief. What are you looking at as far as that ongoing story?
The way I see it is the following. Hurricane Maria brought to the table or highlighted issues that were already occurring on the island, namely a great recession that predated the 2008 bubble. By 2006, economists who study Puerto Rico have argued that signs of recession were there. The 2008 crisis made it much worse. So you have that context, followed by two key elements. You had a case of what's called a Sanchez Valle, where basically a ruling was made where it questioned whether Puerto Rico had a degree of sovereignty, as if it was argued by some during the 1952 Constitution and onwards. And also what's pivotal to this conversation, because we're talking about finances, is a significant debt in which Puerto Rico finds itself. Not only that, but also the bill that's commonly known as PROMESA, that was promoted by former President Obama and a Republican-led Congress, where basically a number of austerity measures have been placed on the island under the jurisdiction, if you will, of this advisory board. So all of this predated Maria. Once the hurricane occurs, it can be argued that it compounded the crisis. Yet, if you want to look at a more positive aspect, the hurricane highlighted to the American public that might be unaware of Puerto Rican reality, the crisis and the hardships that people on the island are facing as we speak.
I want to give a listen to President Trump. In a radio interview last year, he talked about the idea of Puerto Rico becoming a state. Here's a listen.
With a mayor of San Juan, as bad as she is and as incompetent as she is, Puerto Rico shouldn't be talking about statehood until they get some people that really know what they're doing.
So President Trump and Puerto Rico, what have you seen from the current American president when it comes to the territory?
The most radical difference, I would argue, is that he has voiced things publicly that maybe some would utter in private. Now, part of his style is quite direct, and some would argue conflicting. And in that sense, people in Puerto Rico have engaged in a number of Twitter sparring matches with him, included most notably Mayor Carmen Yulín that was alluded to in your audio clip that you just played. And then what's interesting is that not only you have that public Twitter war, if you will, between the mayor and the president, but also you have seen the governor, current Governor Rosselló, who was quite, if you will, apologetic to Trump's role. You might remember in your audience the case of the paper towels being tossed at people in Guaynabo, Puerto Rico. And now even you see Governor Rosselló picking up more of a combative public tone when interacting with Trump, somewhat emulating what has given Mayor Yulín a significant audience in American media, which, to be frank, is quite unusual. Puerto Rico, for the past 121 years, has had a significant invisibility in terms of American everyday political debates. And to a certain extent, Maria and Trump's willingness to engage in this topic openly has made Puerto Rico more of a mainstream conversation in the U.S.
Carlos, as we wrap up, I won't ask you to predict the future, but do you see this current drive for statehood as being more likely to be successful? Do you see Puerto Rico as being more likely to become a state than you might have 10, 20 years ago?
What I would argue is the following. We need to see a binding commitment by Congress where they'll state something to the effect of if a plebiscite were to occur, it will be binding, will abide by the decision of the people of Puerto Rico. In terms of history, what would make us think that that would actually would happen, that Congress would be willing to commit to that extent, is something we have not seen in the past 120 years. If it were to happen now, I would venture to say it's because of the political forces in the U.S. that are lining up particularly behind statehood that at this point have found a more of an audience both in the Republican and Democratic Party. The interesting part is that the person with the most significant audience is Mayor Julene of San Juan, and she does not favor statehood. So it's going to be really interesting how these political forces will interact, particularly running up to the 20 election, not only in the U.S., but in Puerto Rico, where candidates of all different sorts will do their best to gain political mileage and mobilize voters behind the status, because the status question really rallies mobilization in Puerto Rico.
Carlos, thanks for joining us today.
Excellent. Thanks for your time.
Carlos Suarez Carrasquillo is a lecturer in political science and an affiliate faculty member of the Center for Latin American Studies at the University of Florida. He joined us for a look at a plan in Congress that would, if passed, make Puerto Rico a state.